Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
Before we dive in, we just need to talk.
Right. I have a story.
You have a story.
I have a pre-story to that story, though.
Oh, my
which
God.
Which was, I could see you mouthing along to the intro that we just did, because I do it the same way
every
week.
What do you mean? I wasn't mouthing along.
I was in the car with my boyfriend the other day, and yes. He put on the podcast, and I did the intro along with myself, and it was so unnerving that he immediately turned it off.
I
was like, honestly,
hate that,
fair.
And I wish that you didn't tell me that, because now I'm going to just, we should just start layering them and just see, like, one of them.
Brooke and Reaver.
Right, we just hear, hi, everyone. Welcome.
I feel like it's from my years as a theater and film actor that I can say the same thing the same way many times.
Yes. Little do people know that, you know, this audio medium is actually a performance.
Yes,
it's
it is.
Our art.
But aren't we always performing, like,
is
gender
it?
And sexuality at
what
any given time?
What is queerness if not performing?
What is gender if not a constant performance for other people?
What is Batman if not a constant performance to suppress his latent homoerotic yearning and tendencies?
Men will literally dress up as a bat instead of going to therapy.
Men will literally start a fight with an alien being instead of going to therapy. Men will literally force a god and a man who dresses up as a bat to act out their pseudo-sexual fantasies and smooch.
Instead of going to therapy. Okay.
Great.
Wait.
Anyways,
that
yes.
was iconic, but I this
But you
story,
know what's more iconic?
The story is so important that I yes. we have to tell it before
yes.
we actually...
What's the...
Okay.
Lay it out
so
there,
literally,
homegirl.
While we were setting up our equipment, mm-hmm. one of my friends who does...
Shocking.
Who is not involved with the podcast or my online presence,
yes.
I don't think even knows that I do a podcast,
what
texted
podcast?
Me.
The Queer Quadrant podcast, a podcast where we four...
Never heard
four
of it.
Four bisexual filmmakers.
All four of them.
Batman and Superman are here, everybody.
Yes.
Spoiler.
And they are bisexual, and we would like
we
you
have
to respect
stand.
That.
Yes.
Okay, so... This girl, who
yes.
has no involvement with the podcast,
None.
To be clear, or me on Twitter,
sure,
texted me and says, okay, I hope the answer is yes, but were you obsessed with Spirit when you were younger? The horse movie.
Iconic.
And I was like, first of all, how the fuck did you know that? Secondly, do I really give off strong horse girl energy? Like, is
Can
that-
I answer?
Sure.
Yes.
Oh, okay. But she said,
if I was to define you by one movie and one movie alone,
it's
it would
Spirit?
Be Spirit Stallion
Come
of the Cinema.
She texted me back and said, you don't actively give off horse girl vibes, but from one former horse girl to another, I could sense it. I literally want to die.
You know, people are always like, yeah, I have gaydar. I'm able to like tell when there's another queer in a room. You have
horse
star.
Radar.
Yeah, you're just able to like pick up when there's another horse girl. Actually,
I
counterpoint, you have
life.
Spirit Dar. You're
okay.
able to pick up when other people in the room have Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron fan affinities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so you would think that would be the end of the story, right?
Is it not?
It's not.
Oh, no.
And so she said, well, did you see what was just posted about it? And I was like,
I'm sorry.
No, I go on Twitter.
Oh, boy.
There is an animated series.
Yes. Yeah.
Coming.
Oh, coming? There's not already one?
Yes. There is a new.
A new one?
A new
Spirit
Stallion of the Cimarron series.
Of the Cimarron?
It's not. Let me. What is it called? Not Spirit Rides Again or whatever. Spirit Untamed is what it's called.
No, it's not.
And you will never
Brooke
guess.
Solomon.
You will never guess. What the trailer song is?
Give me like a clue, and I want to see if I can guess.
Jordan, it's a Taylor Swift song.
Oh fucking god! No kidding, Brooke. You're like, I don't give off horse girl energy. Let's look at the three defining things about Brooke. One, grew up on a farm in the middle of nowhere and watched no movies. Two, grew up in the middle of a farm, watched no movies, and likes horses. Three, listens to Taylor Swift. All of these things combined.
Did you know I don't actually like horses, though?
Sure,
I'm kind
but like,
of scared of them.
But like, it's a thing about living on a farm.
You are literally so rude. I cannot believe you're doing this to to me right now.
I think the thing is Taylor Swift gives off horse girl energy.
She actually really does.
And thus, anyone who is a fan of Taylor Swift gives off horse girl energy.
And it doesn't help that I literally grew up on a farm.
Right.
And have, you know.
Am I wrong? Because I'm right. Prove me wrong.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. I'm not having a good time
for the rest
right
of the
now.
Episode, we're going to refer to Brooke as Brooke Solomon, Stallion of the Cimarron.
Thank you so much.
I can't believe it's called Spirit Untamed.
Hashtag
That's
Spirit
fucking
Untamed.
Incredible. What a good name.
I don't like it.
I love it. It's I'm
like
all in. It's unhinged.
Little too.
Yes, yes, yes.
The vibes
no,
are
exactly,
off.
Exactly, exactly. That's why I'm all in on it.
The
it's
vibes
so funny.
Are off.
Spirits, Stallions of the Cimarrons.
I don't even think it takes place
in the Cimarron.
Maybe it does.
The Cimarron?
And it like is that horrible like 3D. Like it looks like shit. It
oh no. So it's not 2D animated?
No, no.
How unsurprising.
It's so sad.
So it looks like fucking Doggy Daycare?
Yeah, it looks like it looks bad.
So it looks like Aladdin the series? Or specifically
no.
When you walked in and I was watching Aladdin King of Thieves and you said, oh my God,
that
this
looks
animation.
Terrible, but it's not 2D. It's three. It's like bad 3D.
Okay, what's a bad 3D? Chicken Little? No.
That's so bad. But I mean, it kind of looks like, you know how, what did they just announce? And I was like, wow, that looks so bad. Oh, the 3D Rugrats. Did you see that?
Oh, ew, no.
Did you see that they released like a first look at that?
No,
and
I don't like that.
So horrible.
Oh, that's like the Looney Tunes in live action now. Like,
right.
We don't
right.
want to see
the
a 3D
Space Jam.
Bugs Bunny.
The
no.
Space Jam reboot.
Bugs is supposed to be 2D.
Yeah, it's so weird.
You know who else is supposed to be 2D? Fucking Spirit. I don't want to see a 3D Spirit.
Yeah, I don't
no
like
spirits
it.
On my TV or in my life.
Uh-huh.
I don't want any ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Spirits, mm-hmm. You know, like a spirit.
Are you done?
A spirit visiting
are
us.
Are you done?
You know, I think there is something possessing us right now, though.
Speaking of spirits, let's
oh.
talk about
Team Spirit.
Zack Snyder's obsession with religion.
What
hey, that was
about?
A pretty good segue.
What are you talking about?
Did you ever think that Superman could be a Jesus figure?
Did you ever think that Batman rising as bats surround him with his arms spread out wide towards a white light could be a Jesus type of imagery?
Or, you know, when they literally recreate the Pieta at the end of this movie? I wanted to die.
Brooke, I want to reach out my finger to you like I am God.
Right.
And
were they,
you
I
are
mean,
man.
Literally they say yes. Superman isn't Jesus.
Yes. 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 When Superman goes to a church and is sitting in front of a Jesus like mural.
Isn't that Man of Steel though?
Oh, fuck. Right. That's yeah. Man of Steel. Wow. This is what happens
that.
When I watch all three in a row.
Right. Because you watch them all back to back.
Yes. I do have to say though, it is hilarious that these movies get so pinned for like before this just like we're gonna try to save as much Justice League talk because spoiler a Justice League episode is on the way.
Yes,
and by that I mean Zack Snyder's Justice League.
We're gonna hashtag release
we're
Snyder
gonna release
cut.
The Snyder cut. But I think it's hilarious that all these conversations about his obsession with religion were happening and then he releases an image of the Joker literally like dressed up like Jesus.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Like, have you ever leaned into a bit so hard? Like, I have to respect that.
I will determine if I respect it or not after I watch Justice League the Snyder Cut. Because it's like, I
right,
almost wish
you've
he
never
leaned
seen,
into it
You've
more.
Never seen...
I've never seen...
The OG cut.
I have not. I hadn't seen Batman v Superman before yesterday.
Oh, wait, what?
No.
I thought you had seen it before.
No, I didn't see it. But I've seen enough clips and
goodness gracious.
I feel like I know the basics.
Yeah,
I wasn't
yeah,
that
yeah.
surprised
that it's a 9/11
when I was
movie?
Watching it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But also, like, I knew about the Martha thing and, like, the
what do you mean?
Bleed, I will.
What Martha thing?
Okay.
What do you mean? That their parents are, their mothers are both named Martha? Martha Wayne and Martha Kent?
Yeah.
Wow.
I
didn't know that.
I want to know if that was, like, a Chris Terrio special or, like, a Zack Snyder
was?
Special.
Yes. Yes.
Like,
I would love to know.
I want to know who pitched that.
Yes. I think it's interesting.
Whose original idea it was.
I feel like we should just talk about Snyder right off the bat because I think.
Before we do, though.
Oh.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Brooke Solomon.
I'm Jordan Gustafson.
And this is The Queer Quadrant. And yes. I still don't have a really good way to intro the podcast besides the blurb that I do at the beginning.
Yes.
So, Zack Snyder.
So, it's a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers.
I can't believe we're talking about this like it's a queer movie. Like, we actually have you.
It
you,
is.
Jordan is about to go
this
so galaxy brain on us.
It is a queer movie.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, all of almost Zack Snyder's oeuvre is a queer.
His oeuvre.
I think we could honestly do a Snyder You know how we're, you know, we're right. doing a special month coming up. I won't spoil what it is, but I feel like we could do a like a Snyder month if we were really trying to, just to finish out his filmography, because arguably we're covering this. We're covering Justice League. Yeah. We're going to do 300. We're going to do Sucker Punch.
I was going to say, a friend pitched me Sucker Punch the other day and was like, you should cover it on the podcast.
I mean, I'm sure we'll cover Legends of the Guardians, The Owls of Ga'Hoole.
Oh my God, I can't wait to cover that movie.
Brooke, I'm so excited to go to Ga'Hoole.
Did you know that I read all those books?
Wait, they're books?
Yes, they're. Oh, you think Zack Snyder books. Came up with fucking
Legends
Warrior
of the Guardians?
Owls? He could never. He could. He Ga'Hoole. Wishes.
Yes.
The absolute like horror that I felt when you were like, "Let's do a Zack Snyder month," and we're like, as we all know, Zack Snyder,
queer
iconic ally to the queer community.
So I think this is where I just need to start into it. So. Throughout Zack Snyder's filmography, I'm just coming out here and just going to lay it all out there.
Okay.
Zack Snyder is an American film director. Started out with music videos and then went into film. Mm-hmm. His first movie was Dawn of the Dead, a remake of a classic zombie movie. And honestly, a very fun movie. It whips hard. I think Snyder, here's my, you know what? I'm just going to lay it out there. I was going to save it for the end. It's not really a hot take or a giant thesis, but I think Zack Snyder is the pinnacle of directors who are good at capturing moments. I think Zack Snyder is fantastic at delivering on a moment and a scene that can really like land with audiences or like specific type of images. Like it's very easy to fall into like certain moments where you're like, wow, this like scene rules or this image rocks. You know what I mean? It's very visual and it's all about like selling you on like a moment to moment.
It makes sense
versus a cohesive.
Started in music videos.
Exactly.
Music videos are all about those moments.
Exactly. Yeah. Like sort of a Bay thing as well. And I think it's interesting they both come from that quarter camp. Anyways, so the first half of Snyder's career, he essentially weaponizes sex and a homoeroticism in a very like chaste and repressed manner. So
chaste.
Wow. Chaste.
I mean,
chastain manner.
The sexual energy in Legends of the Guardians, The Owls of Ga'Hoole is off the fucking
look
chain,
those owls.
Tell you.
Go. They're really Ga'Hooling.
Oh my God. Okay. No, you're
no,
in the
but,
middle
but,
of a
but anyways,
there, so
but
keep going.
No. That's what I do all the time. But so like, let's just like go through. In 300, I mean, it's essentially men romping around in leather undies in a time when men, you know, obviously would be having sex with each other. But the movie is so phallic and exhumes such homosexual undertones that Snyder was quoted and was consistently asked at the time, like, what about these movies' homosexual undertones? Like, were they implied? Were they unintentional? And Snyder said that they were intentional and he wanted to, like, quote, like, make young men uncomfortable in the situation, like in the theater, and like think about like what they were watching.
Wait, seriously?
Yes.
For 300?
Yes.
That's fascinating.
Furthermore, then so like that's just 300. I mean, even if you just look at 300, there's a lot of coding going on in that movie where you have Xerxes, who's like the main antagonist, is
right.
essentially coded
super
as
super feminine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Moving to Sucker Punch, there's like the lesbian undertones in that. Moving on to Watchmen, Rorschach is sort of coded as queer alongside Ozymandias. Rorschach in a more repressed sort of way where he takes
like
his repression out
world.
In anger.
Yeah.
Exactly. And Ozymandias more in a, I'm a galaxy brain supervillain and I'm going to like be more comfortable with my like effeminate nature.
He has that sort of like fancy vibe to
exactly.
him too, which super quickly gets coded as like gay.
100%.
And I think it's like a very easy way for filmmakers to be like, well, we can pretend that this is like actually doing something. We'll just give him like a little hip hop and an ascot and
absolutely.
We're done for the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think throughout, so that's like the first half. And I mean, like all of those movies are very sexual and
yes.
just like outwardly sexual. Other than like the Legends of the Guardians, all those movies are showing a lot of body parts, a lot of action, a lot of male on male action. You know what I mean? And it's just like an inherent part of his filmography.
Yeah.
And so then you come to the DC thing and it's much more restrained because you're working within the confines of a more studio system. While 300 was technically a studio movie, as was Watchmen, etc. Like he's a clear studio filmmaker. There's a difference when making a superhero movie versus a movie about 300 men charging into battle.
It's simply a ratings thing too. Like
exactly.
he bumped from all these like edgy hard R movies to, you know, making ostensibly like a family film.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just mean with this movie, I think that he still exhumes these very like homoerotic undertones. And I think the thing is that you can look at this movie in a way that's very aggressively straight and you can sort of just see like, how are we going to like, how are you if I'm a listener and I'm clicking on this episode, the first thing I'm thinking is, what are you talking about? Like, why are Batman and Superman queer? Like, what is the queer subtext? And then you sort of start to peel back the layers of the characters themselves, the pseudo-sexual like undertones that are happening throughout the whole thing. Eisenberg is a character, how Snyder shoots certain things, objectivity, and you really start to realize that it's like a very voyeuristic and like sexual movie.
This is great because this is like you're structuring this like a 5-paragraph paper, and that like in
I'm
the,
setting up
in the introduction, yes, you're setting up all the things that we're going to talk about, and then we're going to go into them in detail.
The tables,
but
yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know the meme where it's like the dominoes,
the
were
tiny
like
domino?
One person. Yes, it's
yes.
Zack Snyder gets first gig, and then the final one is destroys heterosexuality in filmmaking.
Yeah. No, I feel like if we can sum up sort of how Snyder yes. seems to view these sort of homoerotic undertones,
yes.
it's that he sees intimacy between men as a very unnerving thing, and instead of trying to work against that and like remove any intimacy, he plays into the intimacy in an unnerving way. Like
yes.
you said with 300, he wanted to make young men uncomfortable,
like feel uncomfortable within that
in
theater,
the theater.
Yeah.
And like sometimes that's kind of iconic, and sometimes that is really problematic.
I agree. I think there's a question with him is like, is this intentional like homoerotic undertones, or is this like homophobic?
Exactly. Do you just want to make people squirm because you recognize that homoerotic vibes are going to make them uncomfortable?
Right.
Or do you want to force them to confront their prejudice?
What they're thinking. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And I mean, I think that even if this wasn't a Batman movie, if this was just a Superman movie, because if this was obviously a Superman movie, within Superman, which we're not even discussing, quote, the Man of Steel film, there are already so much, there's so much queer undertones. Zod's entire like goal in that movie is to find one man, to find Superman, right? The pods that Zod and all his henchmen are placed in the beginning of Man of Steel are literally
dicks.
Shaped like dicks. It's just like an extremely phallic and like erotic thing. Like everything about these movies is so just like centered around like phallic imagery. And I mean, like essentially the beginning of this movie opens where Superman and Zod are destroying the Wayne building, right? Like
right.
Bruce Wayne's building, and Bruce views that as like a destruction of his like
masculinity.
That's his phallic image, right? Like that's the destruction of his masculinity,
right?
And he is like, wow, so I have to now go out to destroy this man who has emasculated me in front of the world.
Yeah.
And
wow.
he becomes obsessed with him and becomes obsessed. I mean, what other movie are you literally going to just work out and train and change your entire life just to kill and get with one man?
Right. And isn't this, it's supposed to be a riff on, what is it, The Dark Knight Returns?
Yes.
The
yes.
original like
yes.
comic
this
arc.
Is combining essentially two major comic arcs.
Right. Where it's Batman is deep in retirement and has to come back to save Gotham. And
yes.
it's the same in The Dark Knight Rises, right? Where Bane is what is the
yes.
threat that makes him come back.
Yes. But what's weird about that is that, Brooke, you're coming in here with the hot comic take. I have to stand.
Thank you.
Very iconic of you.
You can thank my boyfriend for that one.
Shout out to Evan on pod.
Thank you.
But what's weird about The Dark Knight Returns versus this movie is that while they're both like old Batman, essentially this movie flips the script because Batman in that comic is essentially the outsider and is sort of like viewed as scary by the government, and Superman is establishment, versus this movie, which sort of has Batman as old guard, old establishment, like working within the confines of the government,
right.
whereas Superman is the one who's like invading and is the more dangerous one. You know what I mean?
That's cool. I mean, I feel like The Dark Knight Rises also has those similar emasculating undertones.
Totally.
Like Bane is a bigger, badder version of Batman.
Well,
and they end up throwing
yeah.
each other around. It's
I mean,
it's the same thing.
I think I think now is a good time. Like we'll go through like the movie and talk about the beats that are homoerotic, but I think that it's important to talk about the homoeroticism that exists within Batman. because
men will literally dress up as a bat instead of going to therapy.
Literally, just within this movie, Bruce's home, like one of the first shots that we go to him, when we go to his room, there's a painting above his bed in which Snyder uses it as like a sexual object in quote, to clearly show Batman has a pseudo-sexual fantasy of beating up. Oh, well then here is me. But it's that he puts it there to show that Bruce uses sex to forget his pain. And it's like a pseudo-sexual fantasy about beating other men up to cope with your trauma, but you're also in black latex. And I think there's an inherent queerness, which Grant Morrison, a comic writer who wrote Batman, literally said in 2012 where that the concept of Batman is not straight at all. It's not. I mean, you have a man who dresses up in latex, goes out at night, all in black latex to beat up on other male villains or, you know, hang out with them. The only two people he wants to hang out with are Alfred and Robin, and all the women who jump at him in his life, he has zero regard for them and does not care about them. The whole concept of Bruce Wayne is he's putting on Bruce Wayne as his sort of like straight
the Playboy
coding
persona.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Versus the queer Batman is really the Batman that is the one that he is, but that he has to dress up and he has to hide behind a mask and he represses so much.
Right. And it's like, I think that Batman is the most, you know, stereotypical villain that's like, he is Bruce Wayne by day, Batman by night. You know, yes. Like after hours, he can live
totally
the secret life in the shadows. What is the actual art? And is it over adult Bruce Wayne's bed?
Yes.
In
adult
like
Bruce
his
Wayne's
lake
bed. In
house?
His bed. And yeah, in his like lake.
What is
manor.
It? Is it?
I don't
some,
know what it actually is.
It's
I
probably
have it
some sort of like Renaissance type art,
exactly,
similar to Lex Luthor's like Heaven and Hell.
What do you mean Heaven and Hell? Is there like some sort of religious overtones with Jesse Eisenberg in this movie?
The thing is, I'm kind of obsessed with religious overtones.
Yes.
I honestly wish that they had a little more fun with it, because it's so self-serious that I'm like, okay, we all get what you're doing. You should just lean into it.
Totally. It's so interesting that you say, because I think that's the thing with Batman too, is like,
he's a camp
you
icon.
You have to lean into Batman. And we're going to get to it. And I really don't want to go through all my Joel Schumacher points here, because we are absolutely going to do Batman and Robin, in which I feel like that's where I'll kind of unload the Robin of it all. Because from literally his incarnation, Robin has just been coded as like Batman's, you know, gay boyfriend.
Obsessed.
But Joel Schumacher gets the camp and the erotic and voyeuristic sort of sensibilities of him,
of
and like
Batman,
showing
yeah
the nipples and everything.
Oh,
but
right.
But literally, so like Zack Snyder, I think, also kind of gets that.
I think that
he's like showing these bodies off in a way that is like very stylized and intentional. And I mean, like, we see Batman shirtless a bunch, and we see like Superman shirtless a bunch, and like the way that he shoots them, it's like these like a fascination with like clothing and like how you wear and how you present yourself.
The Superman shirt takeoff ab close-up business is really nice.
Have you ever gone into a bathtub with all your clothes on?
Absolutely psychotic.
I mean,
shoes,
is that the most unhinged part of the entire movie?
I will say that is the part where I was the most shocked.
Yes.
I was like, what is he doing?
Oh, it's insane. It's ridiculous.
But I mean, look, I think that Zack Snyder is a guy that likes sex and you know, the voyeristic option of sex that cinema provides. You even look at this movie, which is like your classic PG-13, and you have Amy Adams naked in a bathtub and literally like a shot up Gal Gadot's legs while she's laying on the ground, like sprawled out. Yeah, that was really upsetting.
Yeah.
Like he
isn't it wild that Wonder Woman's in this movie?
Yeah. Fuck yeah, she is. Damn,
you know
fucking
why?
Right, she is.
Because it's the dawn of justice.
Justice is dawning.
It's not the dusk.
It's the dawn.
The night is always darkest just before the dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And I promise you, the dawn is coming.
Yeah. I mean, I think that she is
Amy Adams
great,
or Gal? Oh, Gal.
Gal
I
is
agree. Gal
awesome
is
in this.
Kind of very much in the pocket in this movie.
Oh, totally. I mean, they don't give her that much to
really?
Until the end. I hate her whole conversation with Bruce Wayne, because it's clear that the two of them have absolutely no chemistry.
Brooke.
Well, I'll save it.
You are not ready for Justice League.
Oh, God. Is there, like, do they? Cause,
Brooke.
Mm-hmm.
In the Justice League movie that came out.
Wait, don't.
There are undertones of Batman and Wonder Woman
I hate
getting
that
into a relationship.
Oh.
Yes.
Ew.
Yes.
I don't like that.
Yes. He hits on her. She kind of flirts with him. Yes. It's very weird.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either. It's weird.
God, what a horrible choice.
Because Batman needs to smooch men. Because that's literally what Batman... I mean, what other superhero has an entire Wikipedia dedicated to just the homosexuality within their comics?
I'm obsessed.
Every single age of their comics. Like, from the 1950s to today, they go through and they're like, here's what was gay about Batman in the 50s. Here's what was gay about Batman in the 60s. Like, literally what?
Wonder Woman, though.
Oh, I mean, it's literally Batman and Wonder Woman. Yeah. Like, those are the queer-coded heroes.
I mean, I guess. I feel like there's probably a much more interesting way to put them together than whatever is happening in this movie, which
totally.
Is a complete lack of chemistry.
Absolutely.
And we know Gal Gadot can have good chemistry because she has it with Chris Pine, but, like, oh my God, the two of them are just not... It's the worst kind of straight people chemistry when you're like...
Yes.
You clearly don't want to be near each other, and the script is forcing you to be all breathy and sexy about it. And yes. I absolutely can't stand it.
I completely agree with you. And I think also that ties in with Amy Adams and Supes in this movie, Henry Cavill, because I feel like their chemistry feels much more platonic in this movie than sexual, even though there's that one scene where he crawls into the tub.
That's good. I just wish for a movie, I mean, and I think that this is the superhero sensibility of it, for a movie that likes to, you know, ogle its characters so much, I wish there was just a little more like actual, you know, face sucking time.
Well, I mean, it's, as we've already said, he's such a sexual filmmaker, and then for it to, like, as we've always said, like, superhero films aren't that sexual. Like, this movie should be like sexier.
I know. It's like, if you're gonna lean into the DC universe took all the wrong lessons about leaning into the dark side, because it, instead of, you know, going campy and sexy, it goes very gritty and self-serious, and like goes so much more into sexualization and objectification rather than like sexiness, and it just is horrible all around in that regard. And just, I don't know, it really annoys me that the general public in the studio system has decided that like gross objectification is more socially acceptable than actual chemistry. And I'm not even talking in like a queer realm.
Yes.
I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later, I just find that interesting. And I think that it plays into a lot of how we talk about like four quadrant movies and what is acceptable and what isn't.
Oh my God.
Well,
I feel like you hit a point there, and I think when Snyder came on board, DC was sort of scrambling to catch up with Marvel,
right,
as we kind of touched upon with Wonder Woman. But it really is like this movie that they are, well, Man of Steel, in this movie where they're investing their chips and they're like, all right, we're going to set up a Justice League, we're going to get this universe going, here we go. But whereas Marvel focused on having like these normal people or these like normal circumstances, then these superheroes get imbued with these powers, and it's like, how are these humans going to cope with their powers? These movies are all about, okay, we are godlike beings, we are superheroes first. Mm-hmm. How am I going to be a human? How am I going to like fit in these worlds?
Absolutely.
And by taking that, it's a much more like dark approach, because it's like, how are we going to like examine humanity? And it's like trying to be tragic, and like there are dark comics and dark comics are good, but it's about like execution and sort of like understanding like commercial audience sensibilities.
Right.
And I think at the time we were already so far deep into Marvel, and people want to use these superhero movies as like escapist cinema. And you can have dark superhero movies for sure, but I think basing an entire studio on one type of image is very difficult.
Yeah. It also just kind of annoyed me that they were like, okay, we're going to be different from Marvel. These movies aren't for kids. These are adults. It's like that interview that Zack Snyder gave when he was like, people need to grow up, okay? Yes. Batman fucking kills people. All
right,
right, sir.
Like, why is there blood on the walls in this movie?
But, like, the fact that DC was like, the characters that we're going to make dark and gritty are our most popular heroes, Batman and Superman, where it was like, no, you should do the Marvel thing and start with someone that didn't have that much in the comics, Iron Man.
Right.
And like make
like what they do with Aquaman.
Like that. Yeah, make someone like that a totally different sensibility than what the general public expects, because it just feels so
forced.
So edgelord of them to
Absolutely.
Be like, Superman snaps people's necks. Right. How do you feel about that? Are you triggered?
And like I'm fine.
It's bad.
Like rewatching Man of Steel, like I'm totally fine with the idea of it being like a gritty look at Superman and like what would a human with these powers do on Earth? Like I think that's interesting. Like sure, that's cool. Like how far would Superman have to go? Who is this like Superman, like in the comics and like in general, represents like this ultimate moral being. You know what I mean? He is like the goodest of good guys. And so like what would it take for him to snap? Yeah. Jane, like break someone's neck. Like I would be interested in that, but it takes sort of the wrong lessons of that.
It's-
and like you want to see, because Henry, it's so frustrating because Henry Cavill is such a good Superman when he works and he's in these movies that aren't giving him necessarily the material. The first half of Man of Steel is fucking incredible with him because it's like very like he's saving random citizens. You know what I mean? And he's just doing this like off the grid thing. And it's like all about like morals and you feel like Christopher Reeve again. And then it just becomes like too action heavy. And, like no one, I don't want to see that. Like Superman's a god. We don't want to see him just breaking down buildings.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'm actually same as you. I'm very interested in the thematics of these movies. And this movie in particular, I actually like sort of the pseudo political religious stuff. I like that they're straight up like, are we worshiping superheroes the way that we would normally worship gods? And like, is that problematic and what's that going to lead to? Like yeah. That's interesting because I don't know if you have seen this, but I feel like in recent years there's been a slice of the internet that's like mythology has been reinvented via the superhero genre.
Yes,
like superheroes are our new mythological figures.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, I would actually like to see a movie dig into that.
I agree.
I have a Superman question for you, but first,
lay it on me, Lois.
The annoying thing about that, the sort of superheroes as God's business, is that The Boys on Amazon has just done
yes.
it so well and has dug into it in like a satirical but still super relevant
100%
way and like made everyone actually think about it and it is very smartly executed. And so it makes these movies look worse executed by comparison.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
It's because they were stuffing too much.
There's it's too much too
going
fast.
On. Yes.
But I
this
am
is, like this should be a Man of Steel sequel that introduces Batman. This shouldn't be the death of like there that's the other
the
comic
death
that
of
I was
Superman.
Gonna So that's an entire comic. Like Doomsday comes and kills him. Do you know what Doomsday looks like in the comics? We'll tweet a picture.
So Evan, my boyfriend, as mentioned, fellow bi, we stand
we
a
have
legend,
to stand.
Is actually pretty well-versed in DC lore.
Oh, my
so
king.
He was helping me through this movie.
Me and my boy.
He said that Doomsday is spiky.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
spikes.
Evan, why is Evan not on this episode? Dude, Doomsday is literally like, what if spikes the concept?
Okay, cool.
And it looks so fun and he's like a goofy villain and like the whole death of Superman arc is like actually good, but
isn't it
why are they gonna kill Superman off in the second movie we've introduced him to? And then that throws off the Justice League because then the whole first half of Justice League they're searching for how to save Superman
and it's like no one believes that Superman is dead.
Right.
First of all, we've only been with him for two movies, and so in the death of Superman it's that Doomsday kills him, but he doesn't actually kill him. He just goes into like deep hibernation mode essentially while he heals. He's he's like a lizard or
kinda.
Like a I don't
regrowing,
know, an octopus that's
guess.
Like going and then regrowing.
Right, like his like arms
he's
coming
regenerating.
Back. Yeah.
Okay, got you. on Superman.
Yes.
So I will continue to inject Evan's comments because there were some really good
we
ones
love,
because
yeah.
I was extremely confused.
The fact that we need to discuss. But yes, your Superman question first.
My Superman question is, knowing that you are like a Henry Cavill fan and that you like what he's doing, what would you say is the best moment for him in this movie specifically? Because I don't remember a ton of like the actual energy of Man of Steel. I remember what happened
in
I remember
this
the
movie only.
Yes, like in this movie, what would you say is the purest, like this is how I think Henry Cavill works best as Superman, like what is his best
yes
moment?
yes. I'm looking through my notes right now to see if I have a beat of where it is.
I don't know if it's just because
I
he's
think,
so... Yeah,
no, what were you going to say?
Is it because he's like so tortured right off the bat that it's difficult to find
It's
one?
Really hard because they really don't give him room to actually like exist as the Superman you want to see. I think the scene in which he has no control and like the whole bomb goes off and he's like sitting there and we see sort of his reaction. I really like that because you're sort of like... he's finally trying to like appease people, and then of course something goes wrong, and then literally it's probably just like the ending when he looks at Batman and is like, is she with you? Like that
she was with you.
Little interaction is sort of like the fun that I want Superman to be like.
You mean the only joke in the entire movie?
Like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
Obviously, people have their flames on Justice League. I'm not defending it at all, but I do like that they have the beginning of that movie. It's like creepy Henry Cavill without a mustache, but like, he's a brighter color and he's like making jokes with kids. And like, that's what you want Superman to be. You know what I mean? Like, you want him just to be like a friend. He's like Spider. Like, you want him to be like, a I mean, at least for me, Superman. Everyone has their own takes. You know what I mean? But like, I enjoy when Superman's like friendly
but this
and
is
wholesome.
This is Zack Snyder's whole take on him, right? Is that like, if you actually had a guy who was
with
an alien
powers.
Who had these powers, he would be like a weird guy that's unable to
like
you
relate
know,
to humanity.
Yeah, interact with society.
Right.
He would be too othered.
And I mean, the whole thing with Superman too is that then that drives Eisenberg, because like Superman is like this uber mesh, like ultimate male. You
right.
know what I mean? And then Eisenberg sort of feels like emasculated by, because he's like the effeminate character within this.
Little
right. And he's like sexualizing
guy.
And wanting to be Superman. And I mean, we'll get into it in the plot, but there is like so much queerness going on with Eisenberg.
And it's all the wrong types.
Exactly.
It's
yes.
It's all
it's
bad.
Problematic.
It's very bad.
He's, yes.
Although I would say it could be worse. He could be like really leaning into it.
Yeah.
And
do you like his performance in this movie?
No.
I waver, which is weird.
I do not like it at all. And I think it's because I was thinking about this in the final scene when he's in jail.
Yes.
The
red coats are coming.
Yeah, that. It's like the most boring way that someone could play an unhinged guy. And I don't. And I think it's because...
It's like Mark Zuckerberg 2.0.
I think it's because he's just playing the hits. He's
yes.
just doing his thing.
Yeah, yeah,
whereas
yeah, yeah, yep, yep, yep.
if you had someone that wasn't so much of this type in the role, you'd be like, okay, I get it. They're doing like an unhinged thing. But he's not really bringing anything to it besides...
It's like we've seen him do it before.
Yeah, but I think that it's... I think even more so than that, he's just not... reaching for anything interesting about the character besides
totally.
What's on the page.
100%.
Like, you don't get any sense of
like what's going on at
home. Motives. He's just kind of doing his thing,
which I think then literally I think plays into the queerness of it, because we're given like the text of it and we have to go with like what he's saying and what he's doing. And so he's essentially like this tortured boy who his father like abused him, and so like he's repressed his trauma through that, and like probably his trauma of like queerness, to then like be like a very sexual, touchy, a sensual predator, like in a very erotic way.
That Jolly Rancher scene,
literally
a little fruity.
Brooke, have you ever exchanged bodily fluids with a naked Michael Shannon in the middle of a pool to bring him back to life?
Yeah, with his dick just, you know,
hanging
really...
out literally just out and about,
the face stroking and
yep.
everything like
right?
that.
Right. I mean,
yeah,
you
no,
know it's so there,
but it's I think that is the whole Zack Snyder thing, when he's like, men touching other men in unwanted ways is
right.
really unnerving. And it's like, yeah, no fucking shit. Welcome to being a woman
right.
in the world.
It's so, like, that's what, like, his treatment of Holly Hunter is so awful.
Gross.
Holly, queen, hun.
Why did you do this movie?
Honey. The piss. Oh, no. Oh,
yeah.
No. Okay, look, I don't want to, like, make this, like, a bad movie dunk on podcast, because,
no,
like, that's not
no,
the
no,
point.
No.
It's just, like, honey.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just think that the script
doesn't
serve
do
her at all, and it's very hard for her to do anything to rise above it, because she's gone so quickly. She doesn't have an arc.
Well, it's like the whole movie, I feel like the thing with this movie is it just, as we've said already, it like tries to stuff so much in, and it's just so plotty in a way that doesn't necessarily help its case, because fucking Lex Luthor's plan is so... overly complex.
I don't want to crack the plot egg yet, because we're gonna
yes,
crack
yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
but I do think that if we like get into it too much, it is gonna become like
100%
this makes
yes,
no
yes,
sense
yes, yes, yes.
I wanted to backtrack. Did you want to discuss out of something about how I've never seen this movie?
Okay, yeah,
because I haven't, and let me tell
so
you
what was that like,
right?
because Brooke, it starts out with a bang.
It does. So I obviously like have seen the discourse around this movie, and I knew a lot of discourse? The scenes. I knew a lot of the scenes. I just didn't actually see it. And it's the same for Justice League. Like, I didn't see Justice League.
God, I'm so excited to watch fucking Snyder Cut with you.
The Snyder Cut, because I'm not going to have any frame of reference for what regular Justice League looks like. So I might have to watch it afterward, but I feel like I need to go in cold for the Snyder Cut, because you're 100% very much not going in cold. So we'll
be able to
see both sides. Okay, but I watched the director's cut, because that's what's available on HBO Max. And I feel like what I was...
Oh, we both dug into the big boy?
Yeah. I feel like it might have made more sense in the theatrical cut, because there's another 30 minutes in there. But then I was like, I feel like the 30 minutes are just extending the sequences. Like, that whole desert sequence is 15 minutes longer than it needs to be, and I'm sure that none of that is in the theatrical cut.
Brooke, you ever have a flashback nightmare sequence where your enemy slash lover has an army and you're just stranded in the desert trying to find him?
Do you know that whole, it's like a whole brand of tweet that's like, men construct intricate rituals men construct intricate ritual dream sequences
to touch other men.
It's like, oh god, I need to find the original quote, but it's like, why we have football and wrestling.
Right.
Men construct intricate rituals to be intimate with other men.
That's literally this movie.
I know.
That's literally like, this movie.
I'm going to pretend that I have beef with you so that I can get intimately close to you in an alley and just beat the shit out of you.
Brooke, you just cracked the movie. Congratulations. Yeah. Keep going. Sorry.
It was just full. Okay. I think that what was most confounding to me about this movie was the plot, but also because the first 2 hours don't have any bearing on the last hour.
No. Like, they don't fight till an hour and 50, I think, right? Or further.
The thing is that I think that obviously the first 2 hours are supposed to lay the seeds for Batman and Superman to hate each other so that when they do fight.
For Batman v Superman.
Right.
Yes.
When they do fight, you're like, okay, I get this. But it doesn't do that. So when Lex Luthor
the Joker
tells them to fight and they do it, you're like, great, honestly this is fine, but we didn't need the preceding 2 hours because there's no reason for you guys to be fighting. I think it would honestly work better if they were fighting for no reason as opposed to these apparently constructed reasons which don't exist.
You know what? We had the exact same issue, I think, with Civil War, where these movies, because they're heroes, they construct these intimate stories and plot lines for our heroes to have like a clear moral reason to fight versus just like Godzilla versus Konging it being like, let them fight.
Where it's like, you know that you want the monsters to punch each other.
Right.
So that's what,
like,
we're going to show
you.
That's why
you're here.
Exactly.
Right. Like, I mean, this movie starts with seeing Bruce's trauma and him immediately like wanted to go fight him. And like, honestly, like, they should be fighting right off the bat.
I know. I think
like, if it's building to be the death of Superman, like, you want to get the fight earlier out of the way. So that way then they work together. And then when Doomsday comes, they have to like figure
work
it
together.
Out. Right.
It feels very Civil War also in the fact that they set up both Batman and Superman as quote unquote morally gray characters in the first 2 hours, where it's like, okay, well, we have Batman branding people and Superman interfering in government relations.
Literally the branding, my God.
And it's like, literally, who cares? Right. Nobody cares. I don't care.
Like, I want to see things go smash.
I don't care if these characters are quote unquote good or not. Yeah, I just want to see the punches.
Right.
I want to see the punches.
Oh my god.
It's truly baffling. I mean, there's
bat-fling.
There's obviously so many ideas at play here, and like we said, I do like the sort of moral quandary and like, let's have a movie digging into the actual ethics of superheroes. Like, sure,
right.
Why not?
Right.
But you can't tack it on to a whole other three movies.
100%.
Yeah. And it's annoying that they have to team up right after they fight each other, even though I kind of knew that happened.
Martha.
Why did you say that name?
What if our parents had the same name and that's why we started the pod?
Wow.
Huge. Wow.
Like I said, I just really want to know. The way I picture it,
yes,
is
they're in a writer's room.
Let's say it's Zack Snyder. We don't really know who it is. Writer X.
Yeah.
Writer X comes in, bags under his eyes, cocaine in his coffee, is like, guys, you will not believe what I found last night. I went through eras of comic books and we've missed it. We've missed the one thing that ties this whole thing together. It's the final piece of the puzzle. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready for me to blow your fucking mind? Both their mothers are named Martha, and that's what brings them together on a deep and personal level.
For the listeners, I've been laughing for Brooke's wind-up
and
delivery.
Thank you.
That was incredible.
Because, like,
that's exactly what it was.
Literally, what the fuck? And it just, it's so...
That their fight ends that way, yes.
Yes, it's also just the worst sort of, like, sexist take where it's like... Bruce and the trauma of his mother and there was those orgasmic pearls.
Brooke, what if there were pearls?
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan being like Martha. And then we have, you know, poor Diane Lane getting like kidnapped in an alleyway.
The treatment and things that happened to Diane Lane are very upsetting.
It's so stupid. I also obviously Gal Gadot, like we said, is great in this and actually does like a bunch of shit
in
the end, which is awesome. But you have Lois Lane who like literally they give her one job for half a second and then they're like, just kidding.
Swimming
she can't
to find the
do
thing.
This. She you thought she could get the scepter, the
phallic,
sphere or whatever.
The phallic spear.
She can't do that.
She
what
has
are
so
you
much
stupid?
To do in Man of Steel.
Yeah. She doesn't get to do anything. Well, that's what the first 2 hours, her discovering that Lex Luthor has been sowing the seeds for these two men to fight, literally
to control God for his will.
It just doesn't have any bearing on anything because he could just straight up be like, I want to control God for my will at minute 20. And we'd be like, okay, sure.
Got it. Makes sense.
We just don't need it. And it doesn't go anywhere. I don't know. This is not a hot take. Like everybody
no,
knows
I follow
this.
You, honey.
It's just very confusing and
oh really?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't understand why he wants them to fight.
Cuz he wants to be with both of them.
But
he has
truly on an intrinsic level don't understand why the audience is supposed to think that he wants them to fight. Sure, I maybe get the Superman thing. But Batman is just a dude. Like
no, but like he like views Batman as like it's like the two of them are representing like a part of Lex that he like can't tap into. Like he wants to be able to like be, you know, like a man like this. I mean, like that's our subtextual reading. That like textual reading is like
when
he doesn't want
reading?
He doesn't want like gods to exist in this sort of world and like they shouldn't have this sort of power. Like if you can control God, like why wouldn't you?
But his plan is so convoluted that we never really like get to that.
But then
point.
He also like Loki loves Zod too because then he's like stroking Michael Shannon and he's like, you flew too close to the sun, my boy.
Yeah,
and you're like
he wants to be him,
but then he creates his own son as well by the creation of Doomsday.
Right. And then he could just sort of like the puppet master.
Yeah.
There's a lot happening.
Yeah.
Too much, obviously. All of Amy Adams' like lead up, Lex Luthor uncovering investigative journalism subplot is pointless.
Even from the beginning with Amy Adams in the middle of the desert, they kill off Jimmy Olsen, who in the comics is her photographer, and they just make him an FBI informant and then just shoot him.
Yeah. Classic.
Why?
Right.
You mentioned your personal connection with this movie and how you watched this for the first time.
Right. Yes. I would love to hear about your relationship with this movie.
So, Brooke,
mm-hmm.
The year, what did this, 2016?
The year is 2016.
I'm a sophomore in college.
I'm a
freshman. Yep.
I'm a baby.
I'm living in my dorm. I am very active, obviously, on the comic cons, you know, watching the trailers and everything. We get the trailer for this movie, I'm all in.
Mm-hmm.
The announcement for Affleck comes out. Brooke, everyone is freaking out online. Everyone is, honestly, we need to discuss this first. Why is everyone so mad about Ben Affleck getting cast as old Batman? He is such a good like, he looks like Batman, you know what I mean? The chin.
He's got a good chin.
His body. Like, he exhumes Batman. And the
he's
fact that
he's a bruiser.
Right. And Warner's was like, you can't go online because the people are mad at you. And then Affleck goes and, like, sees that people were mad and, like, literally goes offline. Is so upsetting. Like, people were just mad because he was in Daredevil. I'm sorry. That was the year 2000 and, what, 3 or 6? Like, goodbye. Anyways, so, of course, me, the Massachusetts boy, was in right. fully invested in Batfleck.
Also, can I just say... Batfleck hot.
Batfleck very hot.
The vest with the rolled up sleeves.
We have to stand.
And like the floppy hair. Absolutely a look.
When
absolutely.
He and Henry Cavill are flirting with each other at Lex Luthor's dinner where they're like, I wouldn't fight this man. And they're like trying to like one up each other and like right. puff their chests. I'm
yeah.
all in.
Yeah.
It's great.
I think that he looks good.
He looks so Burke. It's probably the hottest he's looked in a while.
He looks good. Anyway, so yes, but you as Sorry. A Boston boy are 110%.
Right. I'm all in. Yes. I'm like honestly defending, like I'm here I am on YouTube and everywhere. I'm defending Eisenberg's casting because I'm like, he's going to be like a snitty, like whatever. Godot gets cast. I don't know who she is, so I don't defend her because I have no idea who she is.
That's fair.
But anyway, so I'm out here defending. I'm putting my foot down, and I, for some reason, just decide to throw my weight behind this movie. I don't know what it is. I really do still like Man of Steel. There are a lot of problems with Man of Steel. I don't think it's a perfect movie at all.
But you like that movie a
but
lot.
But I like the movie.
I think you can stand by
the
it.
The trailer is a perfect trailer.
Oh,
and I think...
I mean, you've never
I've said it 100%
that.
On pod. But like the first... I texted you this while watching it. Like the first hour and 20 minutes of that movie are really just so good.
Uh-huh. And then it's
and then,
really
yeah,
apart.
And then it yeah. becomes a CGI fest. But... Anyway, so I liked that movie, and so coming into this, I was like, you know what? It's got my boy. I liked the first. I'll throw my weight behind it. There's this whole thing at the AMC Lowe's Theater where they're showing an IMAX trailer for the release of the trailer for the first time. Like, okay. You have to get tickets to see the trailer. I'm fucking there in line at the AMC Lowe's. I get a Batman poster, a Henry Cavill poster, or Superman poster. Those two things go on my wall and are on my wall for all of fucking college. I am at the trailer debut fucking hyped. I see this movie opening day again at the AMC Lowe's, my favorite theater of all time.
Yes.
I am living. I come out of that movie. I was like, honestly, not that bad. Wasn't great, but I'll defend it. Give it a pretty good first score. And immediately met with a wave of, that was the worst thing I have ever seen with my life. The yeah. online discourse immediately happens. And so me, I'm like, oh, did I see like the same movie? What was my reaction with that movie? The next day I go to the Fenway Regals, the Regal Fenway, whatever, see the movie again. It was a rainy day, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with another person. We both come out of that movie. I go, what did you think? The person goes, I really liked that. So now I'm here. I'm doubling down on it. I'm like, fuck. Maybe like I just have like a hot take that this is a
right.
really good movie.
Maybe
so,
I'm a cutting edge critic.
Exactly.
Nobody's
like,
doing it
maybe
like me.
Maybe people aren't recognizing that the Batman vs. Superman is actually a secret masterpiece.
Yeah.
And so here I am. That was the last time that I watched it. I didn't see it for another...
So like 4 years.
4 years.
Yeah.
I see Suicide Squad. I see these movies. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. You
Bad.
Know, not
Ugh.
Good. Justice League comes out and I'm like, oh God, what is this? But I don't change on Batman vs. Superman because I just hadn't seen it and hadn't engaged with it. But I still had the posters on my wall.
Right.
I still was like actively engaging in a side of me that was like, this is a pretty good movie,
this
I think. Like, I'm going to really defend this movie. I think that this is saying stuff, you know. It's got some really good moments. This is a great movie. And as the 4 years have changed, I have obviously swung around.
So you don't think that
this
is
I don't think
good.
This is a secret masterpiece. Revisiting this movie last night, I would just like to say that growth is being able to recognize that who you were in college is not who you have to be forever. And that your movie taste... often gets better.
Mm-hmm. You know what is my big takeaway from that story? And thank
yes.
you for sharing. And I think
this
was
it's
a really
very
nice
vulnerable
moment.
Of me
yes.
to open up like that.
Very extremely brave. And
yes.
we
you know,
salute you.
I'm one
applaud.
Of God's finest soldiers.
Yeah.
Superman would spare my life.
They would give you that weird military funeral because.
Oh, 100%. The
because
guns.
Why?
HBO Max is so loud. Did you notice that?
Like, yeah, when watching this movie, many things are sound mixed so terribly, and I don't know if it's just a streaming service thing.
Yes, it has to be, because the gunshots, like, I didn't change the volume the whole movie, but then the gunshots at the end for the salute go off, and I'm like, oh my god, like, looking for my remote. It's so loud.
Yeah, it's
anyways,
bad.
Yes,
my takeaway from that story is that I totally understand the desire to stubbornly, like, stick on an issue, and I think that you stuck to it in the purest form that you were like, I just think this is good, because
what I wasn't online arguing or anything.
Exactly. What the horrible cesspool of the internet has become is that people are like, actually, this movie is good, and here's why, and I'm going to dox you if you disagree, and also like dig up random conspiracy theories about how it was supposed to be one thing and the studio turned it into another thing, which is how we are getting the fucking Snyder Cut, which we will discuss 2 days from now.
6 hours of our podcast,
Yeah, but
no, I 100% like I could totally have swung in the direction of becoming like a like edgelord for this franchise, but instead I was just like, also, I just really like these posters and I think they're fun posters. I like Ben Affleck. Here I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you know what? That was who I was, and I have completely become a new person.
That's cool,
maybe
dude.
Honestly, it was coming out. Honestly. Change my taste in like what I feel like I could exhume as like things that I liked. Like I felt more comfortable like being like, I actually enjoy this thing that many people would not like. So like, AKA a Josie and the Pussycats,
this
or
is
anything
so funny.
Like that. Like,
this is so funny.
By coming out, I was able to be more comfortable
this
with the movies that I liked and talked about.
Literally hilarious.
So
Batman v Superman is how I realized that it was okay to say that I like camp cinema that might code me as queer.
Wow. Wow. The fact that I was using Batman vs Superman to repress my queer identity.
I hate this, but honestly I yeah, you know.
Oh my god,
are you like having a revelation?
I'm
right
having
now?
A breakdown on Mike.
I feel like this is a good movie to watch with distance.
Oh yes,
which is why I'm actually very excited for the Snyder Cut, because there's been enough distance from Justice League, and I feel like the Justice League conversation, for except for, you know, a pocket, a very small pocket of the internet, has actually become like, Joss Whedon sucks, and like, see what this is.
A terrible person.
We'll talk about that more next week. Let's just say vindication. Thank you.
Tastes
so much.
So sweet.
I have. Never stand Joss Whedon, and I never fucking will, and I feel so proud.
You are
that I knew the vibes were off.
Brooke, you know what I have to say to that? You are one of our finest soldiers.
I am.
You
okay.
Are. You are Themyscira's finest soldier.
There, since we're already on this topic, I just have to say it. I don't know if I've ever talked about this on mic, but freshman year, I took like a contemporary cinema class.
Yeah.
At college, and my professor had the biggest hard-on for Joss Whedon.
God, really?
Dude, but this was pre all of the shit coming out about him, and it was pre like the Wonder Woman script leak. It was when, you know, it was 3 years after the Avengers.
Was Ultron out or no?
It came out, I think, during our semester. Came out in May. Oof. So, I mean, like, he was such a huge Buffy stan and, like, loved, like, you know, Firefly and
like
what's that? A Dollhouse. Yeah, of the Whedon shows. And then, of course, was, like, the Avengers is, like, our greatest modern cinematic classic. And I remember suffering through his class and being like, I don't fucking like Joss Whedon. Like, why is this guy so fucking obsessed with Joss Whedon?
Why
is
my teacher using quips at me so much? Like, why is he keep saying one word jokes back to me? I don't get it.
Like, you have no idea how much Joss Whedon shit we watched. We watched Lost. He was like a total JJ Abrams head too. Literally, I was so mad that entire class, and I was like, I hate film school, this is terrible. And then I took a normal class the next year, and I was like, oh, so he just sucked.
He just didn't have taste.
He just had really bad taste, and like, literally worshipped the man. So
that's, I am literally, you suffered.
I did, and I just, you know, I feel vindicated because I've never liked him. And
you should feel vindicated.
I feel like it's come full
circle. This is a very important episode for us. We're unpacking a lot of baggage that we've been carrying on our shoulders, and we can't go on carrying this baggage.
I just think it's funny how you're like, you know, I feel like I've really changed as a person and grown, and I'm like, I was always fucking right, and everybody else was wrong.
Brooke came out and you were like, no, it's same me, same taste. I just fucking hate Joss Whedon still.
It is true.
Bad person.
Yeah, he sucks.
Terrible.
Like, has so many toxic work environments and is like the poster child for fake feminism.
Yes.
And I just... Yes. You know, yes. I really don't feel bad that...
say it, baby.
He's falling from his pedestal because he deserves it.
We're tearing down that statue.
And I think we need to show that you can't just, like, across the board let men that one time said maybe women should have jobs, like...
be in control of the industry?
Exactly. Like, be your spokesperson for feminism in
absolutely
the media.
Not. It's like when one white girl is like, I'm going to be our diversity chair. And then she leads with five other white girls.
Exactly.
Like, what are you doing? No.
Like, it's, so it's a really nice takedown to, like, the people that are sometimes the loudest about quote unquote feminism are not. And, like, it extends to so many other people. You think about, like, Ray Fisher and, like, everything that's happened there.
Hold that for JLA.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that next week. Anyway, that's the end of my Joss Whedon corner.
I love this.
And I won't repeat it in our Justice League episode.
I think you should double down on it.
So there we go.
To tie things back to toxic work relationships, I think we should talk about how Batman pushed a young lad, a struggling comedian named the Joker, into a vat of toxic waste and forever traumatized his life.
Yeah.
You know, what a fucking bad person Batman is.
The Robin suit?
So this movie intentionally was supposed to have the Riddler and the Joker in it and was setting up that Robin was probably Dick Grayson, who was killed by the Joker in an explosion in Wayne Manor, which is why they're living by their lake house.
Okay.
Which
obviously
doesn't make sense.
Sure.
Why?
And it's so weird that, like, they essentially bypassed the Joker because it means that so many of the DC Universe decisions are like, wouldn't it be cool if this happened without thinking about the overall implications?
The story.
Like how Wonder Woman ostensibly stepped away from society for 100 years, which means that you can't make any movies about Wonder Woman.
Wait till you see Justice League, because this movie makes you question it more and you're like, God, with 84, it just makes you go, I wish they said 84 in the present day.
Yeah.
Watching Justice League again, I was like, fuck.
Yeah. But it's the same thing, to continue on the Joker thread. It's the same thing with the Joker. Like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we hinted at this Joker and Robin backstory? Sure. But now if you actually want to tell that story, you have to do some weird prequel
thing work to it. Yes.
With Batman. And you have to, like, retcon all this random stuff.
Yes.
And,
yes,
like, we're already going to know exactly where it ends up. And you can't tell a new story because you decided to pack in random backstory in this movie to make it, you know,
right,
seem like your character had more depth.
I bet if they had the Joker in this, I am actually very interested in the Snyder Cut Joker, what they're going to do, because the Joker is inherently one of the most queer-coded characters of all time, like very much in the Ursula camp, you know what I mean, where he is just, I mean, like, I was texting you, I watched the Lego Batman movie. I'm on, like, a Batman DC kick to prep for Snyder Cut, but also something else that we're doing, but we'll get to it. But Joker and Batman in that movie are literally, like, queer lovers.
So,
and, like, they
frenemies?
Won't say it. Right, kind of. But, like, Batman just won't admit that he loves Joker. And in the end, it's basically Batman being like, I'm in love with you, Joker. Like, I want to, like, be in a relationship with you. And, like, we can be, like, enemies, you know what I mean? Like, he's like allowing him to, like, come into his heart.
It's like a proposal to be enemies.
Yes, but it's done in a way that is
Dr. Doofenshmirtz and Perry the Platypus, yes,
vibe. Oh, well, if one was not an animal,
their whole relationship is
right.
Like, oh, I could never, like, give up this special
totally
thing.
Yeah,
that,
but
I
it's like such an
you
obsession with each other. It's
yes,
like that's,
it's,
I mean, like,
great.
Look at
it's
the Dark
so
Knight, look at any sort of Joker incantation.
Megamind is like the same thing.
Oh my God, are we
gonna
cover Megamind?
Actually, maybe we could. I think it's about how, like, you need a villain to be a hero, but it is.
Fuck. Is that all podcasts?
Yeah.
One of us is the villain and one of us is the hero?
I think you're the villain.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Brooke, that was not a question. I was just confirming.
Yeah, but I know I'm pretty sure Megamind is the same thing where it's like one of us is the hero and one of us is the villain and, you know, we have to have each other, but it's fun and jokey and quippy. Mm. But who plays Joker?
Brad.
In, in
Zach Galifianakis.
In Lego Batman?
Yes.
That's so
it's
funny.
It's fun.
And Will Arnett is
Batman.
Batman.
Yes.
Okay.
Superman played by Channing Tatum.
We stand.
We have to stand.
We have to stand.
Anyways, getting us on track.
Yes.
Batman versus... No, I'm sorry. Batman v Superman: Dawn
of
Justice.
BVS DOJ.
Did you know that there was a porn parody of this?
I mean, there's probably many.
Yeah, but it just, like, the fact that, like, it came out so quickly is hilarious. I mean, like, obviously that there's going to be, like, a Batman porn parody with latex or whatever, but, like, this feels like the most homoerotic one to cover. Just, like, Batman versus Superman, like, the two men, like, fighting.
Ooh, versus. I like that one shot where their faces get really close together.
And you're like, kiss. Yeah. Kiss.
I wish
kiss.
There was more of that, honestly.
Yes.
Okay. So.
So this movie. Let's this movie, go into it.
I mean, look, we've already touched on it a little bit. Lex Luthor has a terrible evil plan. Nothing that happens.
You're already
first
missing
two
the first important scene.
Really?
We open with Bruce Wayne's parents dying immediately. We're seeing it again.
You know what was really exciting about this movie?
Is that you got to see the pearls?
You are literally about to sigh so hard.
Have you never seen the death on screen?
No, I have. Okay. I have. Yeah. Jordan.
Brooke.
Not only does this movie contain a supernatural reunion, but it also contains a Hannibal reunion. That's right. That is correct.
For those who can't see, I'm staring off into the distance, Jordan's wondering why I decided to start a podcast.
So Jeffrey Dean Morgan plays John
Thomas
Winchester.
Wayne. Yeah.
Slat in Supernatural plays Thomas Wayne here, and Lauren Cohan, who plays the
mother,
infamous Martha Wayne, is also in Supernatural, although they have never met. And similarly, actually no, they have met in Hannibal. Lawrence Fishburne, who plays newspaper man, I don't know what his name
Perry,
is.
Yeah.
Perry. Okay, cool.
Agent P
plays Jack Crawford in Hannibal, and
a king.
Tao Akimoto, who plays the sexy second in command lady. So rude that they kill her.
Yes.
Literally so rude. She's
Jesse Eisenberg kills her, honey.
I know. It's so rude.
Awful.
She's also in Hannibal. She plays Chio. She plays a cool assassin. And
she looks like a cool assassin.
She and Lawrence Fishburne actually have a pretty cool scene together, but not
that's
in,
pretty cool.
Batman v Superman.
They
anyway,
have no scenes together.
I was really delighted when
you saw her on your screen.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's Chio. Because
when she did nothing, what did you feel?
Sad.
Mm. See, Lawrence Fishburne is so fun in Man of Steel.
Do you want to hear my hot take?
Yes.
I think Lawrence Fishburne is the best part of this movie.
When he's
I know that that is such a small part.
No, I love.
But he is like
I love the, steak.
The only one who seems to be alive and awake.
I mean, he's always alive.
He's
like,
so
the man,
good.
Is
the
Lawrence,
man,
does Lawrence Fishburne ever not deliver?
He never doesn't deliver.
Lawrence Fishburne, come on the pod to discuss.
I'm not, I don't think that I would say that he is always like,
good.
Oh my God, like it's so great, but he always commits.
John Wick.
Yes.
Yes.
He's so great.
Yes, exactly. No, he, like we're only saying new movies, but even old movies, young Lawrence Fishburne, consistently in the pocket.
Yeah.
Old Lawrence Fishburne,
consistently
in
the
pocket.
And he always does cool stuff, but I think he's very drawn to, like, I don't know, interesting characters.
But
like,
he's like such a big established name, but he's like, he'll take the lead role, but like, homie will slide in there for like a two scene performance
right.
and deliver the goods.
He just rolls up and is like, yeah, I'll do this. Why
right.
not? I appreciate that. I couldn't believe it. I was like, why does this weird network show, Hannibal, like have a Lawrence fucking Fishburne in
Dude,
it?
Literally.
Like, what?
Literally. Like, homie did The Matrix. He does not need to be on
exactly,
Hannibal.
Exactly. Like,
but
he's good. And he's also.
Thank God he was on Hannibal.
He's the best. Because I think that honestly, are you ready for this? Similar
yes.
energy.
Galaxy brain, let's go.
Similar energy. And that you have these two men,
yes.
Hannibal and also
Here
Batman
we go.
V Superman.
Homoeroticism.
That
let's go.
Are like kind of hate loving each other.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And you have Lawrence Fishburne because he interacts with Clark Kent so much in this
yes.
movie over in the
yes.
corner being like, can y'all chill
yes,
for a second?
Brooke.
Like, he's so good at playing the straight man who is like, I'm trying to go to work. Can you stop? Like,
can you just kiss?
Can you chill? Like, that is the epitome of Hannibal, is him going to Hannibal and then going to Will and being like, what the fuck is your problem? Like, you need to calm down. You need to stop thinking about this man so much.
You have unlocked your third eye. Congratulations.
Yes.
How does that feel?
And he's always trying to get them to go back to the actual job that they're doing, which is what he's doing here. He's like, can you report the news, please? That's
Literally.
What I'm paying you for.
Literally.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Lawrence Fishburne always delivers.
Yes.
Lawrence Fishburne is our best straight man.
He's really good, and I appreciate that, you know, he's taking the lines of this movie and actually saying them with some sort of spin.
Hot pitch.
Yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne. Is he one of our wokest kings?
No. I'm sorry, no.
Damn.
No. It needs to be special.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll get there. Well,
he's our straightest special.
He is a straight special. He's a man dedicated to his work. And as a character, he is usually a man dedicated to his work. Here's what it is.
He's a character actor who knows he's a character actor, and he has zero ego about it.
Right.
Which is so fucking rare.
But is one of those rare character actors who also has the big blockbuster name to him, because he's not a character actor in The Matrix.
100%.
So you have, he comes in and he like does something fun and you're like, oh, Lawrence Fishburne doing something fun. Wow. Because everyone still thinks of him as Morpheus, who's just like a stone cold badass.
Oh God, Brooke, this is a fucking incredible analysis.
I love Lawrence Fishburne.
Brooke,
you know?
He asks us red pill or blue pill. And you, what else is red and blue in this movie?
Superman's
eyes and Batman's eyes, red and blue.
That's great.
Dude, Lawrence Fishburne, though, my God.
He's good in this.
We need to cover The Matrix.
Oh, yes.
We just need to do like 2 hours on Lawrence on that movie, because he is so fucking incredible in that.
I would love to do the trilogy as like a big sort of like set six-hour movie to talk about. I mean, but obviously, you know, we have, you know,
we'll
more specific
there.
Ramifications for when we want to talk about
We're
that.
Saving certain movies, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Like, you know.
There's a reason we haven't discussed like Point Break yet.
Oh, what movie?
Top Gun.
I don't know. What are those films?
I do want to cover Keanu soon, though.
We need to. Yeah. We need to know.
I recently watched My Own Private Idaho for the first time. Oh my
How
God.
How private was it?
It was so private. It
what,
was so
where were you? What state were you in?
Intimate. I was in California, but in my heart, I was in
Your
Idaho.
Your heart was in Idaho?
Yeah.
That's
it's
cute.
Really good. It's so
Gus Van Sant, baby.
Gus Van Sant. Like, oh God, he's great, dude.
Good. Delivers the goods.
Gay IRL?
I don't know.
I don't know. Don't quote me on that. Why don't you talk about the beginning of this movie while I covertly Google Gus Van Sant?
So the beginning of this movie starts out with Batman giving us a narration about, you know, what it means to be a hero and to be in this world. He talks about the death of Martha. He falls down into a hole and his arms, you know, he rises up into the air like Jesus Christ. We see glimpses of Superman and General Zod fighting in the great, you know, city of Metropolis, which is just apparently a across the pond from Gotham, which is the most infuriating piece of geography that has ever come into my life.
It's like if you had
they
New
are
York,
not supposed to be next to each other.
It's like if you had New York and then across the river, instead of having New Jersey, you
it
just
was
had a
Los Angeles.
Second New York.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
no,
so
it's,
weird.
It's like having like New York and, or oh God, I don't even know. Metropolis is basically the breakdown for Metropolis and Gotham is that Metropolis is New York during the day and Gotham is New York at night.
Got you.
And this movie decides, what if they were just neighbors?
I just don't I mean, obviously, like, DC.
I mean, I get why they did it.
Yeah, DC geography is hilarious.
Yes,
because
it's not actual cities.
Yes, but, like, you know, for example, Wonder Woman works at the Louvre and then, like, Wonder Woman 1984 takes place in, you know,
Washington,
D.C.
It does? Are you sure?
There's simply no way of
There's
knowing.
There's no way of knowing.
You want to talk about phallic symbols.
Oof. What if the Washington Monument
represents
was a giant dick?
The patriarchy? And how it's always like looming in the background?
I love that you said patriarchy. And I was just like, that's a fucking dick.
No, but it's like, so real cities exist.
Yes.
And then this
very rarely in the DCU though.
Yeah. But then it's like the DCEU fake cities also exist. Yes. Like Metropolis or like Gotham.
Or Bloodhaven where Nightwing resides.
Or is Central City is where Supergirl is from. I just, this is so like, it's so like, what are you going to do? Not set it in Gotham? Obviously you're going to set it in Gotham.
But like the thing is
I just don't understand what it's supposed to be. I don't understand how everything fits together.
But they look like they're the same city. So you don't get a distinct geography but from the two, and they try to show Gotham as a scarier place, like when we're with Batman, you know what I mean, with more rundown buildings and stuff like that, but you don't really get that general sense of this is Gotham and this is Metropolis. And the movies that fucking get that and get how production design and how cities and landscapes set up tone and world are fucking Tim Burton and Joel Schumacher's fucking movies,
right?
Because in those movies Gotham is a fucking weird, statues are holding up buildings, it's weird and gross and so stylized, and that's what Gotham like is supposed to feel like.
It
like,
should be a fantasy city.
100%.
I don't think that the Nolan trilogy does a good job with Gotham. I'll say it. I think it looks boring.
It's Chicago.
It's a boring city.
It's Chicago.
I would want. Chicago. Yes. I love the Burton and the Schumacher like vibes. I also feel like 7, David Fincher is 7, is like,
that's like a good Gotham,
because that doesn't take place in any particular city. It is the city, even though it's all Los Angeles, but it's a good Gotham.
Oh, it's a great Gotham.
It's a good Gotham comp.
Have you ever seen Batman the Animated Series?
No, but Evan has told me a lot about it.
I have the entire series on Blu-ray. Okay. It is probably, I think, my favorite piece of television that has ever been put into existence. Mm-hmm. The vibe of Gotham encapsulates Batman in its truest form, and I'm going to throw you some episodes that I think you should watch. You should definitely watch the Harley Quinn one.
I am going to start watching Harley Quinn, the animated series. That's
so
on
maybe
HBO
watch it
Max.
As a teaser, because Harley Quinn as a character originated from the animated show.
Oh, really?
Which is so cool. She's that one of the so only cool. comic book characters of her blockbuster nature to originate from a fucking show and not a comic.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That show's impact.
Yeah.
Anyways, bringing it back to this movie. So we're with Batman. We get a glimpse of Michael Shannon, my true hero.
I know.
A great General Zod. A king in that movie.
Do you think they made him come back and do weird scenes? Oh, you have an answer to this.
Michael Shannon didn't know that he was in this movie. They used just like
a wax
they built
figurine.
Figures of him. Yeah. So when he got like the call from Warners and they showed him the photos, he was like, oh, okay.
All right.
He just didn't know he was in this. And they just dead ass have like full ass Michael, like naked Michael Shannon.
Yeah, like his dick is like obscured so delicately in at least 3 separate instances.
Yes,
it's
yes.
very funny.
What if they were just like, all right, and here's a shot of Michael Shannon?
Yeah. Speaking of dicks.
Oh. Dick Grayson?
The Batman scene where he like wakes up with a woman in his bed and there's like champagne bottles all over the floor confused me so much because I
so
was like, isn't the whole point that his Playboy persona is a persona and
yes.
he like actually
doesn't do it? Yes. Yes. Yes.
I feel like that was very, very Snyder-y. In a nutshell is like, oh, right. Yeah. No, Batman fucks. He fucks. Trust me. He fucks.
This movie maybe is the equivalent of like asking someone like, hey, you know what fucks? This movie.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier, is that it feels so, I mean, there are worse movies that do this, but it feels very much like, don't you think this is like fucked up?
Twisted.
Don't you think this is,
I have a question
gritty?
For you.
Yes.
This is on this topic.
Yes.
I think that there's a difference between being twisted and being dark. And I don't think that this movie knows which one it wants to do.
It's not twisted enough.
Yes. I don't know. Which do you think it's trying to be, twisted or dark?
I think it's trying to be dark because I think that Zack Snyder believes that he is above being twisted, that it's more about like...
But the Joker feels like so inherently twisted.
Yeah, but that's just the Joker
right.
being crazy.
Being the crown
Whoa.
Prince of crime.
Yes.
Right.
Like
the
this...
The clown.
This is more sister the clown prince of crime.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yes.
This is more like straight dark, and I think like it has loftier goals than being twisted. You know, it's about like thinking about how the American public thinks about religion and icons. It does like stop it, but I think that it's you know
grandeur.
It doesn't ask. Don't you think this is twisted? But it's like, don't you think that this is like
dark.
So dark and like so interesting?
How aren't you thinking
about like your whole worldview right now?
What did you feel about with the buildings collapsing? Because like watching Man of Steel, it was very obvious.
9/11?
Well, yeah, like watching Man of Steel, it's like, wow, this is like fucked up. Like this is just like destruction on like such a wild, chaotic level. And like obviously the Marvel movies do it too. But like in this movie, you see Batman like literally like murder someone with a gun and like blood and whatever. And that's fine. Like Batman in the comics has done that. Batman has killed people. Fucking Captain America kills people, whatever. But where was I going with it? Oh, yeah. Like
got too wrapped up in it.
But like the buildings falling in this movie where they're like parallel 9/11, where like Bruce is running into smoke. Like it was very weirdly upsetting to watch.
It just
like felt like so aggressively like. Loud, you know what I mean? I was like, I get it.
I can see how it is a good idea and a very like good screenwriting idea on paper to be like, why don't we dig into the destruction that superheroes cause? Like, you like seeing
totally.
That building explode,
totally.
But now let's think about what happened
like, what
to
are the
people
consequences?
Inside that building.
Right. Great idea.
Cool. I understand why you would pitch that and why you would want to do that. But I don't think it really ever works execution-wise because we're there to see the building explode. Like, it's not that interesting to then have to deal with the consequence of human death.
Like, if it
we
wasn't...
Get it.
Maybe it's literally at, like, a title level. Like, by making it a versus movie, you're setting up the wrong stakes for the audience, because like we're here to, you know what I mean, like
we're here to see them punch each other.
Right, we're here to see Batman versus Superman. Right. We're not here to see like Superman 2 where he deals with grief, or Batman 1 where he deals with like the consequences of like losing his phallic imagery, or like the dawn of Justice League and like how is the Justice League going to get together, or the death of Superman, or the Dark Knight Returns.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
we're not here for any of that.
Right. Right. We're there for Batman versus Superman. God Kong versus Zilla King. I fucked up the name when I was saying it, but it's like King Kong versus Godzilla. Like, that's why we're going into those movies.
I just had to like take a minute to process what you said incorrectly.
Sorry.
That was truly,
I literally going on my walks around my neighborhood, it's hilarious because I walk by a Godzilla versus Kong poster and then I round the corner and see the Snyder Cut poster and then I just come home and we're doing this Batman versus Superman episode. I can't escape.
Evan, my boyfriend, oft mentioned in this episode particularly,
I'm sorry, who
likes to quote, I think it was a writer of Batman from the, or for of Superman from the comics, who said, when you get to Batman v Superman, that's when you know that you've run out of ideas, which is like the epitome of this movie, because there's no reason for it to be a Batman v Superman. Like you said, it could just be Superman 2 and then Batman is also
shows up
in it. I assume that they want to do the Civil War thing where it's like, we want to put Batman and Superman on equal footing, and the only way to do that is for them to, you know, fight each other.
It's the first movie where Batman and Superman in live action have ever been on screen together.
Right.
Where Wonder Woman had ever been on. This is fucking Wonder Woman's first screen debut.
Ever. Like, first movie debut.
First for Flash. First for fucking Aquaman.
Right.
Like, they're doing so much in this and you're just like,
And these are like the first times that we see all of these people, and like it's really, you know, it's like grainy computer screen footage.
I can't believe you haven't seen it's gonna be, I'm so interested to know what your take on Ezra Miller's Flash is gonna be.
Okay, here are the things that I know about Justice League.
There's a league.
There is a League of Justice. I know literally two things besides like the basic. Yeah, I know they have to bring Superman back to life, then they have to fight somebody. I don't even remember who it is. Which is the
thing, like, why do they have to bring Superman? Why isn't he just alive?
I know.
Sorry.
Okay. There are two things that I know about Justice League. One is that Aquaman says,
My man!
And the other is that Gal Gadot delivers a very bad, Kal-El, no! And that is all that I know of that movie.
One more time, please, for me.
Kal-El, no!
Fuck.
Can we have that
as the intro to our like podcast instead of like, hi everybody, welcome to the Queer Quadrant podcast, where we just Kal-El, no.
Yeah.
Oh fuck.
You know what Batman v Superman could have been? And I mean, maybe we shouldn't advocate for this because it removes a lot of like the fun homoerotic punchy subtext, is that like it could have just been Batman and Superman having their ideological differences and not knowing if they can coexist in the same world, and then Lex Luthor creating, I don't even remember what this,
Doomsday.
Thank you. Lex Luthor creating Doomsday in hopes of like controlling the city with him, and Batman v Superman being like, you know what, we need to team up despite the fact that we live in like different cities and we, you know, we have our own jurisdiction. This is like something that people need to come together for. That would have been a movie.
Sure. 100%.
That would have been a movie.
Yeah.
And Lois Lane's investigative journalism maybe would have had some bearing on the plot, because she would have like, because
a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist.
She just doesn't even, nobody even knows that Lex Luthor is behind all of it.
No.
Except for her.
Literally no one knows.
I'm upset.
In Man of Steel, my favorite intro with Amy Adams is she goes back to the office and she's talking to Lawrence Fishburne and she goes, I'm a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. And I'm like, that's how we know.
As if you,
that's how the audience,
my
now
boss,
knows.
Would
right,
not know.
Exactly. Like, I was like, okay, queen, flex.
Yeah,
flex.
Damn straight. I like when she asked for Economy Plus in this movie.
Yes.
Very girl boss of her.
Hashtag girl boss.
Hashtag a girl boss. A girl boss who can't even retrieve a spear from underwater. I was so mad. I was like, are you kidding me? She hasn't even done anything for 2.5 hours and you're not even going to let her retrieve the spear that Superman can't even touch. Like, you're not even going to let her do that? She could just hand it to him.
What's your kryptonite, Brooke?
Bad fucking movies.
Oh no.
What's your kryptonite?
Sadness.
Straight people?
Straight people. Oh yeah, you know what, that's what it is. The straight people forcing me to suppress my feelings about movies.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the plot. I think it's a very funny shot when were with the cops and they're going into the house and they're looking for like the criminals, and Batman was already there, and then we pan up and Batman
being a dramatic bitch. I like that he should be a dramatic bitch.
100%. That's, I like that scene because it's like, lol, Batman would be doing that.
I like when he like revs the Batmobile into his underwater cave and like basically like does a wheelie off that ramp. I was like, yeah, the drama.
100%. I feel like Jeremy Irons, a fun Alfred.
Yeah,
Jeremy
Irons, he's
always
good.
Fun.
He's good. I think it's weird that he is sort of like hot Alfred for no reason.
It's like when they were doing with Marissa Tomei with like Aunt May. They're like, okay, what if Aunt May, but hot?
What if Alfred was hot? And
what if, no, we're forgetting. What if J.K. Simmons as Commissioner Gordon was yoked? Do you remember the pictures that J.K. Simmons posted where he was working out for this movie and his arms were just fucking gigantic?
I forgot that J.K. Simmons is gonna have like the Marvel DC like,
oh wait,
dichotomy.
No, is that in Justice League? Maybe he's not in this movie.
Isn't it the Batman?
No. Commissioner Gordon in that is Westworld himself.
Jeffrey Wright.
Jeffrey Wright, yeah.
So
Westworld himself. I love Westworld that you got
himself.
That.
I knew it. I was picking up what you were putting down. Yeah. Is,
well, I mean, he literally is like the inventor of Westworld in that.
Oh
style.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, Jeffrey Wright is great and should literally
be
in everything.
Everything. No,
I would
so
like
J.K.
To see
Simmons,
him in
yeah, J.K. Simmons is Justice
Gordon.
League Commissioner Gordon, and
that's,
he got fucking yoked
so
for it.
Random. Look, I will see J.K. Simmons in anything, but like, I don't know why.
Right.
That's. Like,
why get yoked? I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, you should not pick a fight for this with this person. That scene happens where
nice,
the two
sexy,
of them
sexy
basically
handshake.
It's like the two of them start investigating each other, and they're both like, I don't like this man because he's representing the opposite of me, but also I'm obsessed with him and I like really want to get to know him.
Yeah. It's classic like toxic homoeroticism when they're like, I'm so attracted to him for this unknowable reason, but I
right.
disagree with him on such an ideological level, like I don't know what to do about this.
It's like,
I guess I'll just punch him about it.
I guess we just gotta fuck. Like, is that how we're gonna get our anger out?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. The okay, good things. I love the music in this movie. I love the score.
Junkie XL, hello.
The Superman theme fucking rules. It's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Gal is fun.
The Wonder Woman theme slaps like no other.
When the Wonder Woman theme fucking kicks in the end of this movie.
Right. When that stinger hits when she shows up, I have never been happier. And it's crazy because I do think, maybe it's just because that theme is so goddamn good, but I was like, I'm alive. I'm awake. I'm here. It's happening. It's all happening.
It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes and you're like, let's fucking go.
Oh my God. Yeah. It feels like such an arrival. And she's so cool. Cool. And I mean,
her outfits are fucking great,
dude,
in this movie.
Huge kudos to Zack Snyder for his casting choices because, casting is really.
I mean, Momoa,
impeccable.
Incredible.
Momoa, inspired.
Yes.
Inspired
yes.
casting.
Yes. Yes. It was.
I can definitely see how Ezra Miller works. Obviously, I haven't seen.
Why does
like,
he
any
show up
him.
In this movie? I know why he shows up. It's for Justice League, but like him showing up in this movie feels so. Unnecessary for world building.
Yeah, again, it's like it's Lois another thing where it's
key.
Like you're gonna have to retcon that at some point. Oh, okay. So like, is Lois the key to reviving Superman in the next movie? And that's why. Okay, I don't even want to. You know what? We're just gonna move past.
Keep going.
That. Yes,
just keep going.
I also have some things that I like in this movie. I think we've actually done a pretty decent job covering the plot, except for the dumb bits.
Do you bleed? He does.
You will.
I think that's hilarious.
I like when Batman bursts through that wall to rescue Martha Kent. Like, he's the fucking Kool-Aid man. He just plaster
honestly,
everywhere.
Honestly, it's so bloody and, like, that scene is so aggro, but I love that fight sequence when he's in there to save Martha. I think it's actually kind of cool. It's really well choreographed.
Yeah, like,
the fucking man knows how to choreograph action. He does.
Sometimes.
The fights with Batman and Superman, it's obviously Batman, his like whole thing is he's the world's greatest detective, and he is so good at like prep for everything that he always has a plan. Like there's a comic where Batman essentially takes down every member of the Justice League, you know what I mean, with their weakness.
Because
he's just
preps.
So big brain.
Okay.
Right. But sure, like at the end of the day, like if Superman could fucking flick his finger and kill this man.
Well, yeah, that's why they have to have like the
kryptonite
bullets,
right.
So that Batman has a fighting chance. Like, we get it. A literal god versus a man in a bat suit.
Take that away. What are you?
Billionaire, genius, playboy, philanthropist.
Nice.
Thank you very much. I almost whiffed it, but I got it. No, I actually, I do like that scene. It's good. It's gritty in a good way. I like the Batcopter.
Batcopter rules.
Although it's not called the Batcopter, is it?
Batwing.
Oh, that's nice. I like the Batarangs. I actually think that Batman is justified in branding people that have done terrible things so that they die at the hands of fellow inmates. I don't think that that's like as hot of a take as this movie seems to think that it should be.
Like, what if hardcore?
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry that I branded someone who was like human trafficking.
Right, right. Like, get them, boys.
They need to pick something that's more morally gray than that. Because then Batman is kind of like, I don't like Superman because he's powerful.
Right.
Like, what do you want him to do about that, King?
Right. I'm
that's
sorry.
That's not his fault.
Sorry. He was born on an alien planet.
Yeah.
I like the scene with Kevin Costner on a mountain. I think it's hilarious and very fun and tender. I love a good dad scene.
I think it's stupid. Wow. So there's
Kevin Costner is great in the first one, as is Russell Crowe. So anything with the dads, I'm in.
Lots of dad action in Man of Steel. Not as much dad action in this.
No.
Oh, okay. All right. I have one final question.
Yes.
I feel like relating to the plot is that we don't see Superman / Clark Kent's face in his casket, but it's an open casket funeral.
Yes.
Does that mean that they have to keep his glasses on? Because otherwise, wouldn't everyone just be like, wait, that's fucking Superman? Right?
Is it an open casket?
It is, because like you see his hands. Lawrence Fishburne goes to like touch his hands at the farm.
Oh, fuck.
But you don't see his face. And maybe they didn't show his face because they knew that the audience would have this question about whether this buried in his glasses.
Honestly, they definitely probably buried him in his glasses, like for sure, and 7 years ago.
It's like the antithesis of My Girl.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Why do they do that?
I don't know.
Why not just close casket?
I think the idea is that like his body is with his family and
Superman's is
Metropolis is burying an empty casket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Weird.
You're going to have some questions about that in Justice League as well.
Okay.
Just wait.
Because they bury him in like nice farm boy clothes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And doesn't he come out in the suit?
Just wait.
Okay. Well, there's going to be some interesting things.
I mean, the whole thing is essentially just boils down to like Jesse Eisenberg wanting him to them to fight, and like Superman then having to like go do it because his mom's captured, and it's literally just them fighting until like Batman's about to kill Superman, and then he says like it's for Martha, and that's like the thing, and
right.
That swings the whole movie. But then Jesse Eisenberg makes a doomsday. He's like,
so that the boys can work together.
Right. I do like the part where Superman lands and he's like, you have to help me. And Batman is immediately like, no. And like tases him with like smoke bombs and guns.
If they just stopped punching each other and talked for 2 fucking seconds, because Superman goes there to be like, man, I need
your
help.
Let's
right
start
now.
Together. Yeah.
It's so stupid. It's but I mean, like, I actually kind of respect that because it's like they literally can't stop like dick swinging for 2 seconds have an actual conversation.
They need to show off their egos. They're like peacocking around each other trying to show who's the tougher man.
Yeah.
While also being like, are you going to put your guard down? Because then I'll put my guard down.
And do you know what we call that?
What do we call that, Brooke?
Gay cinema.
We do.
So that's that. And
they
then
fight.
Lex Luthor
gets... Superman dies.
Yeah, he kills Doomsday, but also kills himself. Wonder Woman is there. She fucking rocks.
I mean, she does so much good work.
I like that the second Doomsday shows up, they're like, yeah, Batman is no use here. And
oh, absolutely.
So he goes and
hides. Dude, Batman's like no use in all in this Injustice League. He like will pop in and out of action scenes, but you're like, at the end of the day, Batman like brings people together. But
right.
Like,
he's the leader.
Like, homie is not set for battle.
I just love how he's like, we need to get the best and brightest, the strongest, this Justice League. And I, a man in a bat suit, will lead them.
Right. Right. Like, okay, sure you will,
sure
honey.
Sure you will.
I mean, Wonder Woman just absolutely funny. Decimates in that fight. We love her.
Yeah, she's great. I was not upset that she didn't have a moment of weakness in this movie with like her fighting, because
right.
Like she's strong and she's
good. I mean, she's
good,
such a secondary character too. It's
like
literally just
she
to introduce her
things.
Right.
Yes.
100%.
She's good. She's great and I love her. Yeah, but you
Lex
know
Lex gets arrested. He visits him in jail. It's
yeah.
weirdly intimate.
Batman gets real up close and personal.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, Lex probably wanted that intimacy with the two of them.
I wonder if, because Joker is not in the original Justice League. He is in the Snyder Cut,
yes.
As has been established, and he says we live in a society. Because as you know, we do live in a society.
God, it's really hard. Do we?
There's simply no way.
I have no idea.
But like, do you think that Lex Luthor and the Joker are going to have, like, interactions?
Kiss? Oh, no, no, no. It's going to be in, like, Bruce Wayne's, like, nightmare.
But isn't Lex Luthor now in Arkham, or is he not?
I could not
determine if Batfleck was, like, I'm actually going to send you to Arkham.
I think
Arkham.
He's going to send him to Arkham. I don't think in that he's in Arkham. I think he's going to then go to Arkham, because Arkham is, like, deranged.
But it's, like, is he going to be in Arkham in Justice League? Is he even in Justice League?
I don't think
League?
He's in Justice League, no.
And he's not in the original, right?
No.
Okay, got it.
I don't think Lex is in
speed.
It at all.
I'm up to speed.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's...
I understand.
I think it's literally just Joker in, like, a nightmare flashback sequence, sort of, with Bruce Wayne.
Right. Yeah. For, like, a one scene.
Exactly, yeah.
Great. But men will construct intricate rituals to have deep, meaningful conversations.
Literally,
with their
it works for both movies. It's just like their whole fight. It's just like you want their fight. Like, it's the whole movie is, like, predicated upon this fight. And it's just like a fight between two men who are clad in latex, like, duking it out. But at the end of the day, you're like, this would just be resolved if you literally just talked or kissed or just, like, anything. Like, the fight is just so much less exciting than you want it to be because of, like, just how their emotionality is portrayed on screen.
No, I mean, I appreciate that we have tried to steer away from, like, the normal, like, regular shit that people say about this movie, which is obviously stuff like Batman v Superman fight is only, like, 10 minutes of the 2.5
right.
hour movie, blah, blah, blah. I think I would be down for more dream sequences, because I think that the dream sequences work well for Batman because he's such a dramatic bitch.
Oh, absolutely.
And, like, the more dramatic Batman is, the better the Batman movie is.
Yes.
Like, the more unhinged, not even unhinged, but, like, the more dramatic he is, the better the movie.
Yes.
It's a 1-to-1 ratio.
100%.
So I want to see more. I want to, like, lean into that, even if it's like, oh, I'm so tortured. Like,
but, like, sure, it's great. I love
it. Yeah, it's fun.
I think it's like with Eisenberg, too, if we're just going to talk about the coding and the queering, it's
he is
so obsessed with the idea of sin, and, like, he really doesn't like sinners because his father was such a bad person, and he's so, like,
his father was a Nazi.
Or, like, an abuser, Nazi,
but
something.
Also a Nazi.
Probably.
Right.
But he, like, hates sin, and, like, the whole, like, his whole outward hatred towards sin feels very internalized, and, like, very, like, he hates elements of himself that he views as sinful,
very much,
which you,
like,
can code as, like, queerness.
You know, homophobic people are secretly gay, which, like,
totally.
Obviously,
which
that's
is not
that's
always
a,
true
a
and
terrible
is an
take,
awful thing.
IRL,
yes.
But yes, that's obviously, like, I think that that is a definite element of what this movie is tapping into,
for sure,
hating parts of yourself,
yes,
and wanting to, like, become something greater than yourself because you can't deal with, you know, these parts of yourself that you hate.
What if you could become something greater? That's what the Man of Steel asks, and it's great when he asks that. He's
okay.
Like, son, you were put on this earth
to be something
to
greater.
Be something.
And then wow, that's so funny, because in Batman v Superman, Martha Kent is like, you don't owe them anything, you don't have to be anything.
Talk about this. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm sorry, no, with great power comes great responsibility, honey. He is supposed to do something. Like, I'm sorry if Superman's burdened with these powers, but if you have the power to save people and save the world, do something about it. Use your fucking privilege.
I think that's, like, an interesting theme to talk about. Obviously,
sure,
it's not executed very well, but I, once again, I can see how that's an interesting theme for a superhero movie.
100%.
It's very common. Like, do I owe the people
who hate me?
Like, yeah. Do I have to be their savior? It's just not that interesting when they're, like, literal superheroes.
Right.
Okay.
Brooke.
I think this is a good time
to
say that
on
so
the queer quadrant.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you do something else.
I just have, like, a little thing.
Oh,
and I think it's gonna,
I forgot.
It's gonna lead into my queer quadrant thing.
Very
but,
iconic of you.
Okay, so Zack Snyder's Justice League, hashtag release the Snyder Cut, is coming out on the day that you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on the day of its release.
It's listening, yes.
And we're gonna cover it in a couple of days. But, like, I just think it's interesting to look at how $70 million was poured into that movie to, like, reshoot it,
yes,
and let,
yes,
Zack Snyder have his vision. And obviously there is a lot of very serious stuff at play here. Personal tragedy and, like, shitty studio meddling and Joss Whedon being a piece of shit.
We're going to get into it.
Yeah. But I just think it's interesting how, like, so much money was poured into that to basically, like, let Zack Snyder have his authentic vision.
His vision, yeah.
And what the studio is doing for that, and how much his vision has influenced the DCEU as a whole, kind of similar to how Joss Whedon's quippy shit and
Marvel.
Influenced Marvel. I don't know. Like, these are types of creative choices that are allowed and expanded upon, mm-hmm. and in a way that's like, no, these men are creating such great art that they need to be able to fully realize their vision. And it's like, it's obviously not a one-to-one ratio, but it's like, what I was saying about exploitation. You would rather show these people, mainly women, in these uber sexualized ways. You would rather have literal ass shots of Gal Gadot from Justice League. I've seen them. Okay.
Yeah, and that shot, rewatching that movie, is egregious.
Horrible. Like, literally just a close up of her ass.
It's literally just her butt. Yeah.
For an entire scene. And like, you're letting people have that, and you're letting them have $70 million worth of reshoots, but like, you're not gonna let queer characters like
exist.
Be at the forefront of your movies. And yes. obviously you can say this for like every lot
right.
of marginalized groups. You're not gonna let people of color have like authentic stories told by other people of color. You're not gonna let women exist in like a non-pandering way.
Yes.
You're not gonna let some same-sex couples kiss
exist.
On screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really bothers me when you put these insane creative decisions that have been made in things like the DC Extended Universe next to that, and think about like, it's so clear what, you know, the studios and what the moneymakers value and what they're willing to sideline. And it sort of makes me lose hope in
Don't.
Obviously not.
I get it though. It's just
I've just been thinking a lot about that with the whole Snyder Cut situation,
yeah.
and how it's like, just it's like, yeah, you know what? We're so sorry that you didn't get to make the people punch the other people the way that you wanted to. Have $70 million to fix it.
Mm.
But like, God forbid.
Like,
God forbid I should
want to
make
screen.
A queer character in a
right.
four quadrant movie. You
right.
know,
like, the
God
audacity of
forbid.
Us trying to have one sort of bit of representation.
Yeah, God
at all.
Forbid we should get a canonically gay superhero.
Well, it's like the fact that we're like, as we're saying, like with this movie, we're digging into like the context and the subtext, and obviously there's so much here. But it's even just like without that, the fact that like we have to do this sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
why can't we just have a movie where there is a queer character as a lead? Like, as a superhero, why not? And like, why are there then when there are these out characters relegated to like the CW? Like, why is Batwoman just on the CW and not?
Yeah, why
like,
is
why
queer
doesn't she have her own film? Like, why
Harley
can't
Harley Quinn only like
an animated fucking TV show?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, Birds of Prey has undertones, but like, it's different. It's
right.
different. It's
I mean,
different.
Like, Renee Montoya's out in that, but also that movie got such a significantly less budget than any other one.
And
did.
She's not, you know, she's just like some random lady. Like,
right.
I mean, it's great, but yeah, I don't know. It's just it's definitely making me think about a lot of things. And that is all I have to say about that. However,
yes,
I think that DC is changing a little bit. I don't know if you saw the line of comic covers that they are releasing for Pride, but there is Superman in a fucking rainbow cape, and it's
hilarious.
Great. There's also Harley and
there's
Ivy,
all they have.
Nightwing.
They have the variants with the actual queer characters like Batwoman, Montoya, and like the Poison Ivy, like the people who are like actually queer, which is cool.
Right.
I think it is hilarious that they have like some straight characters with the Pride covers.
I just think it's hilarious that they were like, Superman is gay.
Oh, for sure.
In this.
Yeah.
Sure. And
even,
also,
I don't even know if it's in it. I think it's just like representing.
Right.
Like,
wearing
we're
the Pride
here. It's
flag
like going to like the Pride parade.
As a cape.
Right.
Sure.
But like Nightwing going over the Pride flag. I was like, wow, my favorite superhero on a Pride flag. Like, we have to stand.
Exciting. So we'll see where that goes in
I mean, it's
general.
I think representation is coming in a better direction. Obviously,
it's
as
happening.
Time changes, things are changing. And
it's
like
happening.
It's important and things are happening. And it's just unfortunate that it's going so slowly and that like none of our major characters who come from like major things of IP have any sort of queerness to them. And any of the queerness is inherently because it's caked into who the characters are rather than just letting the characters be who they should be.
Right.
Like
and
with Batman, it's like he's a fucking queer character. Why not let him be queer?
Right. And it's like it's the same sort of like extrapolation. There's like we don't have to, you know, it's no surprise to people that like the straight white male sort of lean continues to dominate like blockbusters. That's literally not surprising to anybody. And it's, it feels like whenever changes get made, they're only getting made because corporate thinks that it will look better for their image and not because they actually care. But I think we're going to dig into that more next week because we literally maybe won't have anything to talk about queer-wise with Justice League. So what? Let's save that.
I mean, honestly, if it just has one Joker scene, that is 5 hours right there.
I know. I mean, Lex Luthor in this movie does say that Superman has a date with Batman. So
he does.
It's pretty cute.
The two of them are going out for a little romantic dinner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Queer Quadrant ratings.
Absolutely.
Literally like 2 stars.
I counter. I go 3.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't have anything really else to say. I do think that they're... is a lot at play here, but I'm gonna let you
I feel like we've literally covered so much, but there is just so much caked into who, as I've said 100 times before, but there's just so much about Batman which is queer. I think Lex Luthor in this movie is so coded as effeminate, and his sexualization of like Superman, Batman, Zod, his sort of like want and lust to both have the power and take the power from them. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think the whole movie and it, like the way that it's dealing with phallic imagery and masculinity is through a lens that can be interpreted as very queer, whether that be intentional or unintentional, whether that's homophobic or not. I think it is like something to discuss, and I think that's there.
We have discussed.
As we have. Brooke, we discussed on pod.
We did.
And I mean, like, I just think at the end of the day, like, there's an entire sequence where Batman is just working out to get ready for his night with Superman. You know what I mean? So yeah. It's like, I get that it's them training to fight each other, but it's literally shot in a very erotic way to highlight his muscles, etc. And it looks like what someone would be doing to prep for a date.
Yeah. Hey.
So
Batfleck put in the work.
Batfleck put in the work, and he delivered a good performance.
He did. Yeah.
So
yeah, he's good.
3 for me. I mean, like, when we get to Batman and Robin, it will be, I think, maybe a 5. Not actually.
Definitely not actually. Spoilers.
But I just think that, guys, if you really don't think that Batman's gay, literally just take a Google to his Wikipedia page about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's the queer representation that we deserve to
absolutely
see explicitly on screen. Okay. Jordan, do you
I would love to guess the letterbox.
The letterbox. Okay.
2.6. Out the gate.
2.4.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Damn
a little
it
bit
I
under.
I was really confident with
a
that guess.
A lot of people have watched this movie. Also, this movie has like some defenders that like
yes
are actual film critics
yes
and
yes
not just the weird Red Pill corner of the internet. So mm-hmm it has its fans.
It,
let me.
Hey. It had it fanned with me.
Oh, yeah, it did. Let me give you a super quick
box office
breakdown.
I was going to ask. Because this movie made Warner Brothers very shaky with Snyder going into the Justice League, which I want to discuss more on the next episode.
Yes, on the Justice League.
But this movie's performance and critical review had a significant impact on their treatment of that movie.
Got you. Makes sense. They weren't as confident in
yes
him. And that led to a lot of problems. But yeah, look, the production budget on this thing was $263 million reported.
Definitely more.
And the box office was only 3 times the production budget. That's not very many. That's
not
worldwide.
Good.
Opening
weekend
was 166 mil. Mm-hmm. And worldwide, it made 872 mil. But domestically, it made 330 mil.
But for the first movie of having Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman on screen together, it should have cracked a bill.
No problem.
Right.
But it didn't. Like Civil War cracked a billion.
Right.
So,
and
yeah.
Granted, that was established more at the time. But
well, that's
still
part of the problem.
Right. Like, you want Batman and Superman teaming up with Wonder Woman to be the 5th movie, the 6th movie,
yeah,
not the 2nd movie.
And once, it's just insane to kill Superman off in his 2nd on-screen
right
appearance in your franchise.
Homie.
Like, no one believes
don't put
that
him in the ground.
Yeah.
Put him in the sky.
Put him in the sky, dude.
Look up in the sky.
But it's okay because
it's
on
a
the
bird.
On the 3rd day, Superman is going to rise again.
That's
just
true.
Just like Jesus.
That's true.
And we have to.
There's some Jesus
that
imagery in this.
Just a little
just
bit.
Just a little.
Just a tiny bit. Ugh. That's. I hope a Justice League is literally like slathered in it.
I'm praying.
We'll see. Because there's so much that's going to be changed. All right.
Yes.
This is a good lead.
That's what it made.
That is what we're
doing
talking
next
about
week.
In 2 days, there is a new movie Sunday bonus for you. In 2 days. on Zack Snyder's Justice League.
As if you couldn't get enough.
Release the Snyder Cut. I truly have no idea what
I'm so excited.
Be like.
I'm it's, so excited.
I think that this episode is going to be more of like, you know, let's talk about the state
Snyder
of
Cut, the state of cinema,
and not so much like Justice League secret queer masterpiece. But also, who knows?
What if we watch that movie and like Batman and Superman kiss
on the mouth?
Wild.
Imagine. So that's next week, and then that is in 2 days, and then our next proper Friday episode is.
One could say another versus.
This one's
a little different though.
We have a very special guest on who you will discover in a week to discuss Rocket Man versus Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bum, 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 bum.
Two musical biopics, two outwardly queer leads, one good, one not
bad.
So good.
One of them won Oscars.
One of them did not. Stick around for that. It's already in the can. It's a good time. So that's our next proper episode, but to tide you over until we get to that. Justice League,
we're
baby.
We're unleash the cut, baby.
Yep.
The Queer Quadrant cut.
Yeah.
We're unleashing it. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm...
We're going to plop on that couch, get some dinner, and dig in.
It's 4 hours, dude. So...
It's our whole night right there.
4 hours.
It's our whole life right there.
Enjoy... that
we're gonna be probably a little unhinged,
just a tiny bit,
a smidge. Can't wait. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Brooke, where can people find you?
Okay, so if you want to hear more about all of everything,
that,
we're mostly on Twitter. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon,
at Jordan H. Gus,
and we are together at Queer Quadrant. You can find this podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcast. Rate, review, subscribe. Do not review bomb us. That is not cool.
You know what is cool? Review fly us.
Yes.
5 stars only. Help us get on the charts, ladies and gentlemen.
And people that identify as neither.
Right.
It's great.
And Brooke, I just have one question for you.
Okay.
Like, are you a horse girl?
Oh my god. See, I had forgotten about this. I was having a nice time and you just ruined it.
I'm sorry. We're just gonna go watch. You know what we should watch after Justice League?
Spirit
Stallion of the Simmer.
Mm-hmm.